Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of Saving Throws. I'm your host, Red Rooster, and on today's episode we're going to be doing another ranking. I'm going to be ranking the best things about modern day tabletop role playing games versus the old days. And this is really a reaction to that Ben Riggs essay previously about the golden age of role playing being behind us now. What I want to talk about and focus on is my favorite things about the modern day and, you know, focusing on the positive side that, no, I think we're still in a golden age. Anyhow, we'll get into that later. Let's talk about some of the news because there is a lot of news going on right now, actually, and some controversial news that has just popped up to my eye, like within the last several hours today. There's been a hot news story that's hitting the press and spreading like wildfire, but I suspect it's not what everyone thinks it is, but we'll get into that in just a second. First, let's talk about some of the good news. There was a email that recently came out from Trollord Games. If you are, if you have been a customer of theirs in the past or have their newsletter, then you would have likely got it too. And that is seemingly as a result of the success that they had with the re-release of the Castle Yggdrasil book back at, in summer of last year. Looks like there's some great news as a result. And I'm just going to read a quote directly from their email. Today marks a wonderful day in the annals of game publishing history. It is our immense honor and privilege to announce that Trollord Games will expand our work with the estates of E. Gary Gygax and launch a host of new publishing ventures with the estates and Gary's family. We have been awarded the rights to publish the following: the Gygaxian Fantasy World series in its entirety, The Hermit, the Kings of England, Kings of France board game, Hall of Many Pains and Castle Zagig Yggdrasil, including all 24 neighborhoods, Castle Zagig Eastmark, Castle Zagig in Mance, or Castle, Castle Zagig Mouths of Madness, Castle Zagig The Dungeons. We hope to bring these to DriveThruRPG as soon as we are releasing them. The time frame in development will be announced shortly. End quote. So that's amazing news. So as I, you know, as was announced at the beginning, I think we knew that they were going to be doing at least some of the Fantasy World series. We definitely knew The Hermit was coming, and in fact, that Kickstarter has already come and gone for The Hermit. But everything else, like the, you know, some of these other ones, like that board game, I'm not at all familiar with. The Hall of Many Pains and all the 24 neighborhoods, I'm not familiar with that at all. So Zagig and the Eastmark, the Mance, Mouth's Madness, not sure if those were published before, but great stuff. But I do believe that the Dungeons was one that I think that was the second one that was published and got it to a couple people, but largely got canned and we never got to see anything of it. Regardless, it sounds like we're going to get a lot more stuff. So hopefully this continues to sell well, because I would love to see them expand on it. Even, you know, obviously Gygax isn't around anymore. I would love to see them finish anything that was left unpublished and continue to expand further, because I believe these guys are in a good position. They worked closely with Gary before, and I think they would be true to his spirit to continue on this line and work from what they have. So, you know, if they have access to his original Greyhawk notes, I know he doesn't want his notes published in any form, but I would like to see them have works derived from those notes. So, yeah, obviously not seeing the behind-the-scenes notes that he kept, you know, respect his wishes, but otherwise, being able to derive works from that, that would just be a dream come true. So needless to say, I'm very eager to find out what the release schedule is going to look like. Again, we already know The Hermit's happening soon. That Fantasy World series, very excited to dive into that whenever it comes about. And everything else, I'll be gobbling it all up. I can't wait to hear when this stuff comes. Hopefully it's paced well enough so it's not going to hurt our wallets too bad. Anyway, that is coming up, so looking forward to it. And if you're interested in finding more of this Gary Gygax stuff, you should check out the Trollords website. Maybe sign up for their newsletter to just so we can get notified as soon as that stuff is coming up. All right, so next bit of news. Again, more positive. I'll save the more controversial thing for last, but the next bit is that Pendragon, a game that I was quite excited to pick up the starter box for at Gen Con last year, well, the 6th edition core release is all set to come out this year, apparently. So, I saw this announcement. It was... I saw it on the EN World site, so I'm going to quote their article here. And I quote, Pendragon's 6th edition from Chaosium finally has a release date. The first of three core rulebooks, the Player's Handbook, will be hitting store shelves this coming April, with the Game Master's Handbook and the Noble's Handbook, which is for high-level play, coming as soon as logistically possible, quote unquote. April will also see The Grey Knight, an updated edition of an adventure by Larry DiTilio of Masks of Nyarlathotep, Botep Fame from 1986. So I'm going to interject here because I'm just reading this part now. Masks of Nyarlathotep was an amazing Call of Cthulhu adventure, and I think I talked about it in one of my previous episodes. It was one where a character I played basically caused a whole TPK, but it was a really memorable campaign where, you know, we ended up being transported back to ancient Egypt and living out our lives as slaves, likely perishing in that time. But anyway, that's beside the point. Would definitely be interested in checking out this author's The Grey Knight. I don't know anything about it, but it seems to be a cause for excitement. And I'm really into the Arthurian legend and the in this game as well, Pendragon. It's a game I had always heard about previously. Picked up that starter set in at Gen Con last year. So I'm very excited to see what the full release is going to look like. So I'm wondering if I'll see some of the stuff at Gen Con this year, because those Gen Con tickets will go on sale in early to mid February, and of course Gen Con itself in August. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself here. So further to this announcement, they say there will also be a campaign kit and a GM screen, plus a range of additional products such as an atlas, a bestiary, regional source books, and more. Also planned is an updated version of the Great Pendragon campaign, originally written by Greg Stafford and released in 2006, which covered 80 years of game time across multiple volumes. Okay, cool stuff. Sounds like they're planning a lot of support for this, so I guess they're expecting a surge of interest. You know, it makes me wonder if because of the, and this is just me speculating here, but because of the D&D 2024 core rulebooks that we're expecting to see probably in May this year, if they're anticipating that there might be a surge of interest in fantasy role-playing, and, you know, you might want to be on shelves when the new D&D books are out for people going to the game stores to pick stuff up, might say, hey, Pendragon, I really like the King Arthur Legends. Let's take a look at this. I don't know. It's just pure speculation. But regardless, I'm glad to see this stuff, coming back and seemingly continuing to surge. And especially for Pendragon, because it's not like it's a D20 game, right? It's just another fantasy RPG with a recognizable, branding, but like a recognizable kind of fantasy. Everyone knows King Arthur, so very cool. All right, next up, Dungeons & Dragons is now officially supported on Foundry. So Foundry Tabletop, that's the virtual tabletop. Obviously, Roll20 and Fantasy Grounds are the two current day leaders in that market of virtual tabletops. Foundry has been, I remember when it came out and it was kind of like this distant third, I think they've really covered a lot or made a lot of ground. It's long been supported by Paizo with Pathfinder and several other games, but they haven't had official D&D support until now. But this is notable specifically because we know that Wizards of the Coast is planning to release their own 3D virtual tabletop, and they already have their maps virtual tabletop that's in alpha on D&D Beyond. But knowing that they're going ahead and officially supporting Foundry, I'm hopeful that this shows that they do continue to plan to support third-party applications, even with their own virtual tabletop just on the horizon here. That's only a good thing, right? Like, obviously, you know, they're going to want people to play on their tabletop, but I'd rather that they take the approach of like, hey, we offer such compelling stuff on our tabletop and it's a great experience that you just want to play there while not having to just deny everyone else to make sure that if you want to play official D&D stuff, it has to be on us because we're going to make it exclusive. So it looks to be, at least, again, there's no guarantee, but it looks to be that might be the way they're going to continue to offer this stuff across the board wherever you want to play and leave it upon themselves to offer something more compelling to attract customers. That's the best way to do it, I think. But anyway, what do I know? All right, let's get into the last bit of news I have for this week, but it is a big one because if you subscribe to a lot of D&D YouTube channels and social media stuff, you'll see something, a headline that popped up like last week sometime, but I just thought it was just silly clickbait, but now it seems to be blowing up a lot more now, and I'll tell you why. So that headline is the rumors that Hasbro is going to sell Dungeons & Dragons, and specifically, they're going to sell Dungeons & Dragons to Tencent. So if you're not familiar, Tencent is a large media company in China. They are heavily involved with video games and technology. So if you're a video game fan, then you probably have heard the name Tencent before, and I guess they're worth quite a bit of money, well more than Hasbro. But rumor is that, oh yes, Tencent is intending to buy Dungeons and Dragons. So we know that in recent months that Hasbro has had some financial difficulties given their failing toy lines, and we also know that Dungeons and Dragons is one of their most valuable properties along with Magic the Gathering, and that D&D has of course recently been very popular, especially in the video game world, with Baldur's Gate 3 just recently getting the Game of the Year award from the Video Game Award show in December, and lots of attention on it from there. So there was a rumor earlier, or speculation from Roll for Combat, which is a YouTube channel and run by Steven Glicker, who had theorized that perhaps Larian Studios, who was the developer of Baldur's Gate, would be interested in buying Dungeons & Dragons, the whole brand. But I mean, to me, that just, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, Roll for Combat is a pretty decent channel to watch for the gameplay or game discussions, but does tend to veer a lot towards the more sensationalism when it comes to D&D. There's a little bit of a dislike there, I think, for Hasbro. But anyway, either way, he does good stuff usually, but this one seemed to be a little more of just the outrageous clickbait stuff. But that has been picked up. And it looks like, so it's, there's a Chinese news agency, I think they're called Pan Daily. I'm not really familiar with them, but from the little research I did, it looks like they are a legitimate tech, like a source of tech information in China and other Asian countries in that region. And they are reporting that Hasbro is in early talks with Tencent about acquiring the D&D IP, as they put it. Now, the wording, however, of course, is translated. And to me, when I read the article after, so two things struck me. Number one, it seemed to me they're reiterating a lot of the stuff that was in the Steven Glicker Roll for Combat commentary that D&D would be sold. Because he also even posited maybe Tencent would buy this. And this article from Pan Daily mentions an anonymous source. However, it suggests that it was someone within their community there. So I don't know for sure that that's it. Either way, but when you read the article, it's translated. So I feel like there's a little something missing, lost in translation here, and a little bit of a different, based on the source of the article. Like, I think whoever's writing the article keeps talking about the Dungeons & Dragons IP, but not necessarily. I didn't see a full understanding that under D&D you have Forgotten Realms, you have all these different settings and different characters and whatever. So they just keep talking about D&D IP. But I kind of got the impression as I read it that it's not that Tencent is looking to buy Dungeons & Dragons outright. In fact, I think what's happening is they're looking to get an exclusive license because Tencent owns has a 30% stake in Larian Studios, which is, again, the developer of Baldur's Gate 3. And I think Tencent, the way it's opined, is looking to avoid having ongoing exorbitant licensing fees and instead looking to get some sort of exclusivity in terms of licensing. So the way I'm taking it is that they're looking for exclusive rights to continue to create video games for D&D. So not necessarily having to go back to get permission to do all these things, having some sort of exclusive agreement that only they may do whatever they want with a D&D license in that media, in that field, because they're not really like in the market for, or at least I don't think they'd be in the market for book publishing or you know, bankrolling or continuing the development of a tabletop role-playing game. It just doesn't really seem to fit. But I will say that on YouTube, most content creators seem to be jumping on this very reflexively, reporting it as, well, looks like Wizards of the Coast is getting ready to sell Dungeons & Dragons due to their financial hardships. And I just don't buy it. I don't believe that. I don't think that's the case. Could I be wrong? Sure. Maybe that is what's happening, right? But it just doesn't make sense. None of it makes sense, especially because a lot of the stuff you hear about, you know, Hasbro and Dungeons & Dragons just aren't doing well. They, you know, Hasbro is suffering greatly. Well, it's true. They are having financial troubles. It's not the doom and gloom situation you might think it is based on, you know, being informed by all these different YouTube videos. Ever since that whole OGL debacle from last year, it seems to be there's this kind of negativity train that continues to chug along about anything to do with Wizards of the Coast, D&D, or Hasbro. And this, to me, seems to be part of that, like almost like a, I don't want to say a desire, but kind of like that, like they kind of want this to be true, and everyone wants to make sure that they're first to get this information up as quick as possible on this hot breaking news. But to me, it really comes off as, I think people are jumping to a massive conclusion here, because again, you know, Hasbro's main money makers right now are the D&D brand, and also Hasbro's known for not getting rid of any of their IPs. So if anything, I would imagine if they felt D&D is in a bad spot, we need to do something with it now, they would be more likely to shelve it and bring it out later, because a lot of their properties, G.I. Joe, Transformers, etc., will come back into style again, could be in another decade, and there will be a lot of nostalgia that a whole generation can be impacted by. So hey, guess what, we can bring this out of the vault and start a new line of toys or whatever, right? So I think they'd be more likely to do that. I don't believe that they'd be willing to just sell it off, but anyway, that's just me speculating now. But I don't believe that that this is happening. I think that everyone's kind of jumping on it. So if you're listening to this episode and you're seeing those same news stories I am, and you're not sure, or you're thinking, oh, what's going on here? I wouldn't be concerned about anything that you're seeing there, because I do believe that this is just content creators looking to get in on this hot news, or what they think is news, and jumping to some major conclusions here. I don't believe this is happening, but time will tell. All right, well, that's it. That's the news for today. In terms of what I have been playing, how my games have been going, well, I had something I picked up actually recently. A friend of mine came by to play our weekly game and had messaged me ahead of time saying that he had accidentally picked up a few Pathfinder First Edition campaign setting source books and had inquired. He knew I had a lot of these books and wondered if I had them. And I figured I probably do, but I double checked. And as it turned out, I had none of them. So he very kindly donated to me these books because he said, I have doubles and I didn't mean to acquire these ones. So I'll just hand them off to you since I've been running this game for so long for them. And that is the, again, first edition Pathfinder. It's Faiths of Purity, Lost Treasures, and I can't remember the third one. It's just out of reach right now, and I can't remember what that third one was. I haven't had time to really look through it, but I picked up a couple of good ones there, and I'm pretty excited to flip through them. But I'll say this, that I was looking through mostly Lost Treasures last night in Faiths of Purity, but that's why I remember them so well. But as I was looking through them, I kept thinking, like, wow, it's so funny to read this stuff because it's like a time capsule. I suddenly got a lot of nostalgia for playing first edition Pathfinder. I remember going to Pathfinder Society and playing those games at the stores. It was great fun. And it's like, I mean, Paizo still does great stuff, but they're relatively different now. Like they feel like they've changed a fair bit since that time. You know, not necessarily good or bad, but it's different now anyway. And, you know, going back to that old first edition Pathfinder stuff, it felt like it was such a time of growth for them and just a lot of opportunity. And yeah, it was just a nice trip down memory lane to look through that stuff. And, you know, since we do play a Pathfinder game, once in a while, which has been on hold for a little bit, but is actually just about to get started up again. It's going to be great to be able to like revisit some of the stuff and maybe find some use out of these new resources that I have. All right, yeah, but other than that, yeah, that's what I have been up to, and that's it. So I guess we can get on to the segment of the show. Thank you so much for waiting around, and here we go. Let's get into it. So like I said, today we are going to be doing the ranking of the best things about modern day tabletop roleplay games versus the old days. So like I said, this is a reaction to that golden age essay from Ben Riggs, not meaning any disrespect to Ben at all, but just my own sort of take on things. Like I said, I like to, you know, I mentioned before that there's always a lot of negativity in social media and YouTube and things like that. You tend to get a lot of clicks when you post negative stuff, and that the algorithm really rewards that kind of stuff. So it's very easy to get bogged down in that and think, oh, the sky is falling. But really, it's not. It's, I think, sure, are there things that could be better? Of course there are. Not everything is all sunshine and roses. But that said, things aren't all doom and gloom either. So I wanted to go over some of my favorite things about the hobby today versus how it used to be. And yeah, just kind of go over that and ranking my top five best things, I think, that we have today and why it makes it a golden age and continues to be. But instead of just focusing only on the good, I'm going to try to come up with a negative side to it too, right? For all the good things, there's always, you know, can be negative sides to it, even unintentionally so. So I think that's something I want to focus on today. Just throw a little bit more positivity, but not toxic positivity, not like everything's great, oh boy, I'm so happy. I want to talk about realistically the great stuff and recognizing where that might also sometimes be a problem. So anyway, let's get into it. So like I said, I picked five specific areas here, and I'm doing it in a top five fashion. So where the number one part will be the best thing overall and so on and so forth. So let's start with number five then. And this is something that's, this is of course my personal list. And I think you'll, if you've listened to my show long enough, you know why this is important for me or why I really like it. And that is just that today there are more conventions and special community events that are happening than there ever has been before. So I love going to Gen Con. I've made no secret about this. I get super excited. To me, it's like second Christmas every year. I love it so much. It's something I look forward to all year long. And as well as that, there's a few other things, right? It's not just, I mean, Gen Con's been around for the entirety of the hobby, basically. So, and that always existed. So I remember back in the day reading those ads for it and just thinking, oh man, I wish I could go, when it was like, I didn't have the means to get there myself and all that stuff, right? So living in Canada, it felt even more impossible for me to ever see that until one day I was able to do it. But before that, I didn't really have a lot of recourse. I mean, you know, you'd have game stores around and stuff, and sometimes you could post like a looking for a group kind of thing. But really, you just didn't have big conventions and those big events you had to read about. It was always Origins and Gen Con, and that was it. I didn't know of anything else. You know, there might have been other things in certain communities, but nothing that I was ever familiar with, nor realistically was able to attend. However, today, that's a very different situation. So obviously, yes, we have Gen Con, and just for the fact that I'm no longer a child, I'm able to get to Gen Con and do that myself. But that's far from the only thing. I mean, we have, and again, not just conventions, but other special community building events. And like I'm thinking Dungeon Crawl Classics, which a game I love so much, which is not a huge, huge, huge game, but, you know, moderate for the industry anyway. And they have DCC Day every year. And that has been amazing. Like, just they put in some special items that usually stores will run events, and even if nothing is, you can take it on yourself, work it out with the store, and Goodman Games will send you materials. And it's just so amazing that they do that. That is something I just absolutely love. Now, we also have, for obviously those Pathfinder fans and Starfinder and such, there's PaizoCon. That started up a long time ago, and actually PaizoCon started as just a fan thing where they started running some Pathfinder Society games. I believe that was the origins of it at a hotel, and eventually Paizo started showing up to it, and eventually it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then Paizo was like, hey, let's make this an official thing. Paizo got involved, started putting some money into it, and even though obviously the pandemic happened, PaizoCon still went on digitally, and now they've kind of gone all digital with PaizoCon to make sure people from all over can do it, which, as I've stated before, I kind of wish they would go back to in-person as well. But it sounds like this year they are looking to test out that idea of having remote PaizoCons. And I'm hoping that's an idea that works out, because PaizoCon's on the West Coast and I'm not. So it would be easy for me to attend something closer, I think. And I would love to do it, right? But otherwise, I know I have access to do that via online means in attending these seminars and stuff like that's great stuff. So PaizoCon's one. Another thing I look forward to every year is Free RPG Day. This is something that I would have never in a million years have thought of before. I would have never thought, hey, one day there's going to be a day where all the game stores and nerdy hobby stores are going to have Free RPG Day, where they give you free D&D modules and other role-playing games. Like, I just had no concept that anyone would care enough to do such a thing, right? Never mind the fact that there'd be more game stores. So, and that's the other thing too. There's a lot more local game stores and they run their own community events. But on top of all these like big, like Gen Con, DCC Day, PaizoCon, Free RPG Day, all these things like that, you also have a lot of local and regional conventions, typically where you live, right? Now, I'm lucky in that I live in a large-ish city, but they have several conventions throughout the year. Obviously, nothing to that scale, but we have a gigantic overall nerdy convention that hosts a lot of tabletop gaming. We have plenty of smaller tabletop role-playing game conventions just all right in the city, right outside of the city. There's plenty of options for this stuff, and it's, again, something that I would have never imagined happening before. So, you know, back at the time, or, you know, back long ago, I always dreamed of, imagine if they just had Gen Con North and it was just right down the road for me. Oh, that'd be so awesome. And I still think of that too. I would love them to do an official Gen Con North. But anyway, the fact of the matter is that we do have a lot of these great conventions we can easily attend now, where something just did not have back in the day, right? Now, what's the negative side to all that? Well, I think it's just that it can kind of get a little bit diluted. So I'll say one thing. Part of Gen Con that I love is it's special, and right? It's just like Christmas. It comes once a year, and it's a big spectacle, and it always delivers, and I love it. But when there's so many different conventions to go to, I want to go to them all, first of all, but they start to feel a little less special. And I mean, Gen Con's always Gen Con. It's a big thing. But I go to some of these other cons and it just sometimes I start to get con fatigue. And listen, that's not that much of a negative, quite honestly. But you do start to get con fatigue. And when you go a lot, you start to feel like, I should really start running things. And you can get yourself in a bit of a rut that way. And I'll say that it can be a little bit disruptive in that way. So I really do pick and choose which cons I go to. So really the negative here is that there's a lot to choose from. So it's not too much of a real negative, but if you try to go to all of them, you will get burned out and you'll start to become a bit of a con snob a little bit. So yeah, I guess there's that. But I think just having these special events and conventions overall is just a huge positive compared to how it used to be back in the day. And yeah, I don't see that going away anytime soon. All right, next up, number four, and this is the ease of content creation. Yes, so this is not just, you know, writing your own game and stuff, although that's a big part of it, and I'll get into that in a second, but it's also like what I'm doing right now. I'm doing a podcast, right? Like that, it's very easy for me to just do this. Sometimes the biggest barrier now, the biggest barrier used to be having the technology and the ability to do so. to do something worthwhile. Now the biggest barrier for me is just, especially before I started doing this, was getting the willpower just to do it, right? And like, that's all. And that I just had this mental block of before thinking, like, well, how can I do something like that? Yeah, I'm not cut out for it. In reality, I'm like, well, why not? Why can't I start doing it? Who cares? Just do it, right? You get someone who can motivate you, push you into it. My girlfriend really encouraged me to do this. And I hesitated for a long time because I didn't really believe in myself. But then I just thought, you know what, regardless of how I feel, I just need to do this. She's right. I just need to do this. And I started doing it, and now I love doing this. So that kind of content creation is a way to celebrate something you love, right? But also, you know, writing your own game rules. It's incredibly easy to do this. And I'm thinking of things like DM's Guild, for example, right? This is the popular one where you're allowed to create content for stuff that they've allowed you to do. So you could do, if you wanted to write a supplement for the Forgotten Realms, you can just do that now and post it, and it will be sold. Of course, you know, Wizards of the Coast, part of that agreement is they take a substantial chunk of that profit, but you do get paid for it. You know, so like there's that stuff that you can do. You can write your own adventures, your own supplement for those campaign settings, or should you just wish to do your own campaign whatsoever, it's very easy to create that content. And you have several different game licenses now to choose from. Obviously, the OGL, despite the debacle earlier last year, we have the new Orc license for Pathfinder and potentially others in the future. And of course, the Creative Commons. Lots of rule sets are out there available for you to use from without any fear of legal repercussions. And plenty of systems as well exist from 1974 to today. Plenty of role-playing game systems are out there now that have been iterated and iterated throughout the years. And it allows just any newbie game designer to have a lot more resources that you can draw from. You might not be like an expert, quote-unquote professional game designer, but if you have an idea, you can put pen to paper and you can probably find an audience to play test, to play with, whether it's just a local group of friends or otherwise. But there's a lot of resources out there. You don't need to have a professional publisher to get your stuff online. You have DriveThruRPG, you can get up there. And really, it's just how much work you want to put into it and put it out there, and you can do it. It's so easy in this, again, something that just didn't exist like that back in the day. So I will say that there is a drawback to this, and this is more as a consumer, is that there is a glut of stuff. This is kind of like when the D20 license was released in the early 3.0 days, and there was just such a glut of third-party content, and there was a lot of shovelware, as it were, just not so great stuff. So it was hard to sift through and find the good stuff. Kind of the same thing digitally. Like I said, anyone can just do whatever they want and sell it. But if you're you're out there looking for that undiscovered classic kind of thing, and they are out there, right? And I'm thinking things like Runehammer Games, who I just discovered out of the blue. And now I'm like, oh, wow, actually, Runehammer is awesome. And you just discover all this self-made stuff who's just working off these licenses. And turns out they are brilliant. So that stuff's hidden. But with that, you also get a lot of stuff that's not great that you might waste your money on. And it's just hard to sift through sometimes. So there's that negative side to it. It kind of makes for a lot of white noise as well. But I think the positives outweigh the negatives in this case. So the ease of content creation is excellent, and it's really just all over the place. So, yeah. All right, let's get on to my next one, the third one. And I think this is kind of a no-brainer here. Obviously, D&D 5e. But even before that, third edition D&D really revitalized role-playing games. And it's had kind of ups and downs throughout the 2000s, but certainly from 2014 forward, it's been on a massive high given the success of 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons. And as they say, a rising tide floats all boats. I don't know. It's some iteration of that. And I think I've said that one before. But really what I'm getting at is number three is the variety of games that are available today. So you guys all know I'm a huge OSR fan. I love the old school style. It's always, always, always been a thing I've been into. And that particular segment of the hobby is booming in tons of incredible stuff. I'm thinking Shadow Dark, Knave, and hopefully the upcoming Deathbringer from Professor Dungeon Master. Like lots of great stuff. Obviously, Dungeon Crawl Classics, Old School Essentials, obviously Morkboard, yeah, just tons of stuff. And that's just that one sort of niche part of it, right? There's tons of other games that are talked about. Fabula Ultima, which is the Japanese style role-playing game based on like the video game inspirations from Japan, as well as just tons of stuff. Obviously Call of Cthulhu got a big boost, and you know, you have different variants of that basic role-playing. You know, you have in Pendragon coming up, I think is going to be similarly done. You know, yeah, just there's tons of role-playing games out there. There's lots of licensed role-playing games. I've talked previously about the Terminator role-playing, and there's really a role-playing game just about for everything out there you can think of. So if you want a role-playing game for something, there's a good chance it might exist already. I just discovered the other day, if you remember the movie The Green Knight that came out a couple years ago. So that was a movie I thought was excellent. I loved the movie. And I know it's based off of that old poem. But the movie I thought was incredible. And I found out that, in fact, Studio A24 had commissioned a tabletop role-playing game made out of The Green Knight. So a friend of mine sent me a link to watch the trailer for it, because there was a, I guess, a trailer posted to YouTube for it, and you can still buy this this role-playing game on the A24 website. And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know they made a role-playing game out of this. That's wild. I just, yeah, it doesn't really surprise me that much. But still, like, you know, a friend of mine really loved the Buffy the Vampire Slayer TV show. I've never watched it, but I know there's a lot of huge fans of it. But there was a big role-playing game for that, and, you know, he was out at a local gaming store one day, found several copies of the handbook for a few bucks each, and he picked up a couple copies and handed one off to me, said, hey man, if you ever just read up on it, maybe we can play a game one day. And I said, yeah, for sure, I'd be willing to give it a shot. But just the fact that exists, is that's pretty cool. Again, I have no specific, I mean, I've never watched Buffy, and I don't know, it's nothing I'm necessarily into, but hey, I'm willing to play it with that friend, although we never did play it. But you know, it's something that is on the shelf, and maybe one day, because I know he's a huge fan and I'd like to support my friend, right? But yeah, just tons of games out there. Now, of course, the negative side to the giant variety of games, and I will say this, is that it can dilute a little bit. Obviously, 5th edition D&D, you'll never have trouble finding people to play, but when you start to go into smaller hobbies, like I'm thinking, let's use the OSR as an example here. Looking into the OSR, I might find a group that wants to play Morkborg, but no one wants to play Pirateborg. That's not actually true. I haven't experienced that specifically, but I'm just saying that's a realistic scenario, right? Or someone who's, I'd rather play old school essentials, nothing else, versus someone who's like, oh, I want to play Dolmenwood campaign. You know what I mean? Like there'll be smaller player groups, and it's going to dilute things a little bit, because a lot of interest will be around that same idea, but people will start gravitating towards smaller groups. So I guess, you know, to alleviate that, you're going to want to maybe be a little more open and not necessarily have to stick to just one or the other. But maybe if you're playing OSR, being true to that spirit, you might be able to accommodate everyone. But either way, it helps. It can dilute those player bases a little bit by having so many options out there. But again, you know, the alternative was just not having that variety of games. So I think it's an awesome plus for today. All right, next up. So this is number two, top two things. The number two, and this has kind of been a piece that has touched on every single thing I've mentioned so far. But I think the number two most or like best thing about gaming today in the tabletop role-playing game space is technology. I mean, this probably just goes without saying now, and I think some people might even say that's a problem. And you know, I'll talk about the problem side of it after. But the great thing about technology, the first thing I think of, like if I'm running a game and someone asks me some sort of arbitrary rules question, and it's something that's important, because I know the one way you can deal with it, hey, you know what, I'll just make a ruling on it now, let's worry about it later and we can adjust as needed kind of thing. But sometimes if it's a matter of life and death, and a rule is an interpretation of a specific rule is important, but I just don't know it off the top of my head, if I have that digitally, I can usually do a keyword search in a PDF and come up with it quick. If I don't have that searchable PDF, then I can look it up online, right? Especially for something like D&D, I can just Google, hey, does this rule work like this? And probably find some acceptable answers. If there is an official answer, then I can get to it pretty quick. If not, I can find out, oh, here's how other people have run it, and I think that makes sense, right? So that's having that those digital copies to be able to scan that stuff pretty quick, and that goes for D&D Beyond as well. If you have that subscription and own some of those source books, you can just do a search for a specific monster, a rule, or whatever, and it'll pull it up relatively fast for you. I mean, of course, there's nothing wrong with just doing the old flipping through the book, and there's something a little bit charming about doing that, but it allows you to keep playing the game pretty quick and making an accurate ruling. And of course, online access for this kind of stuff. And not only having online access to look up rules, but if I'm looking to, say, describing a monster and I have an image in my head of what it might look like, or I'm trying to describe it, the characters aren't, or the players aren't fully grasping it, I can do a quick Google search to find an image that might suit my needs relatively quick to help keep the immersion up, right? So online access is huge. And of course, I've already mentioned it, virtual tabletops. It was in the news today talking about Foundry officially having D&D now supported, but virtual tabletops is a huge thing. So this started, my first experience with virtual tabletop was in the mid-2000s, I guess. And it wasn't great. But we obviously, due to the pandemic and various lockdowns, this technology really matured very fast. Things like Roll20 already were existing and were coming along, but they have since proliferated quite a bit. And I can only imagine if we had a situation like that before this proliferation of technology, then there just wouldn't have been a lot of D&D being played, basically, right? But this allowed us to keep playing those games. And even after, you know, you have groups that have moved away from one another, this allows them to reconnect and play with each other again. Now, I always say that in-person is the best. I don't think there's any real substitute for it. But playing online can allow you to continue the game against all odds. And in some cases, like I have someone in my game group who moved away across the country and she can no longer be a part of the in-person game, but we can always patch her in through Discord and have her, you know, playing on through video chat. And it works very seamlessly, to be quite honest. We just have a camera. We can show the battlefield. And whenever we do need to break out the minis, it's very easy for her to say, hey, I'm going to move from here to here kind of thing. Or we can even have that displayed on the virtual tabletop part for her. And yeah, so it works very well to be able to do that. Not always the best thing, but the alternative was that person's gone, they're out of the game. You know what I mean? So I think that's great to have that option. So technology is obviously a huge thing. And like outside of that stuff, like, you know, there's several online resources for campaign organization, even just like using a word processor to keep your campaign notes organized, or creating an online blog to track the progress of a story, especially if you're playing once a month or even less, maybe. You know, obviously, when you grow up, you don't have as much time to play as you did when you were younger. So, you know, if you're playing this years-long campaign and everyone's going to eventually lose track of what happened all the way 2 years ago when we started this campaign, if you have that organization digitally stored, you can have it on online wiki or Google Drive or something like that. It's all there, and it's super easy for people. And again, that's stuff we just didn't have access to, and it depended entirely on your memory and or your handwriting, right? If you took good notes, and was your handwriting better than chicken scratch? So anyway, so it's very cool to have that stuff. And again, I particularly like having that shared network drive. So if someone's like sitting at home, oh man, I'm getting ready for the game tomorrow, what happened again? They don't have to just call me up in the middle of the night, hey, wake up. What did my character say that last time 2 years ago when we played, when I was dealing with that pig vendor? They can just go online, check the Google Drive, and get their refresher that they need. Same with storing people's character sheets and stuff like that. You can do that all digitally, so people can access that stuff as they need it, basically, right? And then, of course, you have some of your digital aids like Sirenscape, which I've talked about. Actually, last week I talked about some of the accessories I like. So Sirenscape has added a new layer of immersion to have really targeted sound effects and stuff. And again, I have this control panel. I don't need this big fancy modular system. I'm able to just do it digitally to be able to add that sound effect to the game, plus lots of other digital tools. So I will say the obvious downside here with technology at the table is the distraction it causes. Everyone knows, anyone who's been a DM or even a player knows, when you're playing, eventually you're going to have someone who pulls out their phone and is clearly, like, is checking their email or text or whatever, even in some cases watching TikTok or some crap like that, and they have the sound on. It's like, you're not paying attention, I guess, huh? That is a significant pet peeve, and it's the kind of thing you hear about from, like, DM horror stories, and it's a real thing. It happens, and it's obnoxious. But anyhow, again, it's just, no matter what, even if you ban it from the table, that stuff still finds its way there. And if someone's going to be distracted by their phone, chances are they're bored by the game at that point anyway. Not necessarily through any fault of your own. Maybe they're just getting tired from sitting there for so long. I don't know. But either way, I think technology has added so much to the game that, like, incorporating it into your games isn't a negative thing. I think as long as you keep those players engaged with the game, you know, you're in a good spot there. So I think technology has been a huge plus. All right, so my last bit here, my number one, the best thing about the modern day gaming today is just straight up the widespread proliferation of the hobby. So this has been kind of a theme throughout every single entry here so far, but it's just the widespread popularity and proliferation of the hobby. So obviously Dungeons & Dragons in the very, what, like early 80s or mid 80s had that satanic panic moment, but really what it was known for after that was only nerds play D&D. If you mentioned that you play D&D, depending on where you lived, you could potentially get yourself a black eye at school, right? And I mean, not cool, obviously, right? But it was just a thing. You had the jocks, the nerds, and the da-da-da-da, and it was like, you're all just a bunch of nerds. But now it's kind of shed that. I mean, sure, it's still, yeah, it's a geeky thing, and it is. It's not, I'm not using that as a pejorative here, but it is indeed a geeky hobby. But it's not necessarily like the social stigma it used to be. It is now actually kind of a cool thing, right? There's a lot of celebrities who are like, yes, I'd love to play D&D, right? Like, obviously, with the popularity of it in popular culture, Critical Role was a big hit. And you have like guys like Joe Mangiello, who've been really like toeing the line there for nerds. And I remember even back when they did the 30th edition or 30th year anniversary of D&D, they released a hardback book showcasing the art, and it had a foreword by Vin Diesel, who was like, yeah, that's right, I love D&D. So it was like, you started to see hints of it, and now it's just full on. They have these, like, I mean, you see Deborah Ann Woll has released an adventure for D&D and does regular stuff. You have the, oh my gosh, what's the guy's name? The dude from Scream, one of the killers. Anyway, he has a Beetle and Grimm. He's full in D&D now, right? You have lots of celebrities that are doing their own live play episodes, doing celebrity appearances on things like Critical Role. It's everywhere. So it's kind of has this coolness to it, and it's become water cooler talk in some groups, right? With did you watch Critical Role last night? And that kind of stuff, right? You know, we have TV shows that are based on D&D associated brands, such as The Legend of Vox Machina, which is on, obviously, Prime. We had the D&D movie with Chris Pine earlier, right? Like, there's lots of stuff. It's just proliferated everywhere, but not just, it doesn't make me say, oh great, now we have celebrities playing, like, that's fine, but that's just helped to shed that ultra nerd sort of reputation. Again, still very nerdy, but it's like, I don't think people have that same sense of like, I better hide that I like D&D. I'm embarrassed by my hobby. That's not as common anymore. Now what we have is we have a lot of people out there who are super into it, super proud to be into it. And we have people who are, you know, like I said, community creators. Like, again, I'm making this podcast, right? There's lots of those YouTube personalities. Like Professor DM himself is a teacher, and he's got this very successful D&D show, and it's really a community building, right? So you have lots of community creators out there, and they fill almost every kind of niche that you're looking for. You know, OSR, if you're into the hardcore role playing, you're looking for some modern mystery type stuff, urban fantasy, you know, any kind of niche you're looking for, you can find someone else to share that with, because again, this hobby has spread all over the place. Obviously, yeah, D&D has been a huge beacon for that, but it's everywhere now. It used to be very difficult to find like-minded people or people who understood what the game was. Now it doesn't feel as daunting to bring up Dungeons & Dragons in a conversation potentially with a stranger, right? To say, what kind of things do you do? Oh, I love D&D, right? Like, I just love gaming, both video gaming and tabletop role-playing games. You're not really going to get too much of it. Like, I think there's a lot more understanding. It's in the mainstream now. So again, I think that's a huge thing that's probably the biggest surprise as well, that this hobby has proliferated so much. So what's the negative side to that? I guess similar to what I said about having such a big variety of games, that, you know, it fills just about every niche. So sometimes if you're looking for a specific niche, maybe you're going to feel a little bit underserved, depending on how hyper focused your niche is, right? And also, and I will say this, there's definitely a group out there, there's kind of gatekeeping that can happen in the community too. Some people get very protective of it, whether it is someone who is just an old grognard who's not pleased that the younger generations are into D&D and blah blah blah. I mean, I think a lot of people want to see it succeed like that, but when they see it succeeding in a way that, oh, that, well, that's not how I play D&D. Like, again, I'm very old school. I love the, you know, the old way of playing, but I'm not at all against anyone playing it the way they want to play it. I love seeing this hobby proliferate like this, but there are some people who will be like that. But at the same time, too, I've had experiences myself at a local game store where we were playing D&D, but they were playing a different game, and there was a little bit of a snide remarks and comments back and forth, and, you know, and this is part of the problem. There's a little bit of tribalism that starts to happen, right? And I'm thinking like edition warring type stuff, or like Pathfinder and D&D camps who are just so against one another. And, you know, like I said, we even had a group of people into My Little Pony that were showing up, not even as a role-playing game, but trying to out-muscle the role-playing game people. So having that that kind of stuff happen, I guess, just kind of goes with the territory when something like this grows. But yeah, again, I'd rather see it in the position it's in today, where it's just ultra-popular. Even if I'm not always into all the different games that come out or all the decisions that get made on certain games, but the game is out there, and I know there's a community out there that shares the same values I do with these games and that I can easily play with. And I'm not afraid to play different styles of games myself. So I think it's a just overall net positive. So, yeah, that's it. Those, I think, are the top five best things about the industry today as compared to the old days, and why I think that we are still experiencing a golden age, and I expect this to continue for quite some time. And like I said at the beginning today, you know, try not to focus too much on some of the negative stuff you hear, like those hot news stories that you hear that are kind of looking like they're looking for clicks. You know what? Even if this was true, if today Wizards of the Coast was like, you know what, we're dive bombing D&D, we're getting rid of it, it's gone forever, goodbye, we're ceasing to operate as well, they can't, like, I mean, it would never disappear, because there's always going to be people that love this hobby. There's other companies that are running it, maybe not to the same degree of success. I mean, that's obviously a unique situation there with D&D. But the spirit of this game and really what Gygax represented will live on regardless of what happens to any business decisions that get made around the game. So in, you know, when an edition changes or there's a remaster or a revision to the rules that comes out, it's okay. You don't need to like wholesale change over to everything, because I can promise that there will be plenty of people who do want to play. The question is just whether or not you know you're willing to look for a new group, or if you want to, you know, at the very least give it a shot, see if you like the changes or whatever. But either way, like, there's no reason to feel like the sky is falling, because this game doesn't live and die by the whims of a community, or of certain, I don't mean a community, by the whims of a corporation or company at all. It's 100% based on community support, and that is where we're strongest right now, I think. All right, well, that's it. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. Let me know if you agree or disagree with anything I brought up, or if there's anything else you wish I would have added, or let me know your list of things, of stuff that you really like about current day gaming versus the way things used to be, or even if you don't know how things used to be, the way you've heard things used to be. And you can always reach out to me by email. I am at redroostersgamingcoop@gmail.com, or on X, my tag is at Red Rooster GC. So you can go ahead and message me there if you'd like. Okay, well, thank you so much for your time today, and have yourself a great day. Bye-bye.